Welcome to Red Alert Radio, grassroots radio with an ear on the issues that matter to you. Hosted by your local Labor MPs.
Kia ora koutou, ko Julie Ferry, toko ingoa, ko Puke Tāpapa, Puke Wiwi, te maunga, ko te awanga te awa, ko Manukau te whanga. Tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou katoa. Kia ora, my name is Julie Ferry. I'm the Deputy Chair of the Puke Tāpapa Local Board, one of five Roskill Community Voice Reps on that board of Auckland Council, and I'm part of the City Vision Centre-Left whānau. This is my second show on radio, Red Alert Radio, and I'm very keen to get your feedback. You can find me easily on social media, both Twitter and Facebook. Just search for Julie Ferry, that's spelled F for Fred, A-I-R-E-Y. Now, through my shows, I'm going to be exploring the value that a left progressive approach can bring to local government and our communities. This is in contrast to the small C conservative approach that held sway in my area in Mount Roskill for most of the old Auckland City period, for decades in fact, often resulting in artificially low rates, neglected infrastructure investment and low facilities in our area. We've seen this most recently with discussions about the poor state of our sewage system and also the need to massively invest in infrastructure around stormwater to reduce flooding to many homes. Each month, I'm aiming to talk to a guest who has innovative and interesting ideas about how to make local government better, more relevant to people, and more useful too. Last month, I talked to Adriana Christie of the Waitemata Local Board about the use of design thinking in local government. And this month, my guest is Lindsay Waugh, Kaipātuki Local Board, who has a particular passion and interest in including art in her everyday work as part of the North Shore's local government. Thank you for coming on, Lindsay.
Pleasure. Nice to be here.
Thanks. Now, you were on the Birkenhead Northcote Community Board prior to the Super City starting in 2010, and this is your third term on a local board. You've also been a chair. Reflecting on all those years of experience now, how do you think the local board structure differs from the old community boards? Do you feel like it's better or worse?
It's miles better in our community because we actually have decision-making powers. We have our own budget. My experience with the community boards was that we would make recommendations, which is really all we could do as a community board, to council, and then frequently be ignored or declined. And so the inequity of investment in the Kaipātuki area was quite tangible, and we've been able to reverse that.
That's great. I know Puke Tāpapa, we often see Kaipātuki as a sort of a sister board, similar settlement patterns in terms of the decades in which development happened and people started living in the area and changing the land from bush and farming. And also for me personally, I grew up in Kaipātuki and my mum still lives there. So I know we often look to see what Kaipātuki's doing and really appreciate the innovation that you guys bring, which has meant that we've been able to push the envelope on our side of the bridge too. So that's been great.
It's not just innovation either. It's actually demanding quality, equitable quality. And I think that's something that hasn't always been there.
Yes, I would agree with that entirely. Now, one of the reasons I wanted to interview you was that I know you have a strong interest in art with your background as a film and TV art director, and you also have very strong connections to the art community. Now, public art is something that tends to be loved or loathed, and as such is sometimes off limits for politicians. It can be a bit risky to say, hey, let's do some public art here, or let's do this project in a way that incorporates art or takes an artistic approach. How did you come to make the connection between your artistic career and the community work that you've been doing through local government?
Well, I think public art is something that connects you to a place, and it's something that you reference visually and in your mind when you think about a place. So to me, it's really important in terms of that connection. But I'm also very wary of politicians choosing art because I think that's something that's very dangerous and usually is a failure.
Yes.
So I did reflect on how Newmarket managed to have more public art and explored that and discovered that they had established a public arts trust. So with their assistance, we established a Kaipātuki Public Arts Trust, which enables that public arts trust to attract external funding, so it isn't all ratepayer funding. And then we gave some seed funding for them to develop their own program and to support them in partnerships for public art initiatives, with a clear proviso that politicians don't get to choose, but it goes to professionals to choose any integrated public art and not planted art. That's the other thing I'm really keen on, and that's the integration of art into projects, not added on later.
So explain a little bit more about that, if you would. So what would be an example of planted art versus integrated art that people might be familiar with? I mean, I'm thinking, for example, about the Pohutukawa bloom that's by the motorway junctions in Pitt Street.
That was
which personally I really like.
It's morphed a bit, but when it first went in, it was hideous, and it wasn't even requested. It was just somebody's decided to put it there. It's still biggest belief to me that it's still there. But anyway, that's beside the point. I'd rather talk about integrated public art. And because I had quite a strong message about the value of public art in our first local board plan when I was chair, it initiated responses from other infrastructure developments like stormwater. And we had stormwater come to us with a project in the Wairau Valley that was really just a refurbishment of a stormwater pond that needed work on it, and they came to us and said, how about we actually add value to this by putting public art and amenity into this big spend anyway. And so the Public Arts Trust got involved in that project and were involved in the selection of the artist, and it's a magnificent result. And it could have just been a stormwater pond, and now it's not. It's actually an amenity. People can go there, they can have their lunch there, and it still functions as stormwater as well.
And this is Crofters Lane, is that right?
Croftfield Lane. Well, it's it's right by Harvey Norman's, if I'm allowed to say that.
Yes.
No, in the Wairau Valley,
I'm quite familiar with the spot and actually went and visited it last year to have a look and took my children, who were very interested in the way that it was laid out with water and also little platforms and art that, as you say, was integrated into the space and that they could interact with and play with. That idea that art can be something quite robust and tactile, not necessarily something that you only interact with by looking at it.
And I think the other thing that was integrated into that was sound. Because the way they designed it, the water, as it passes over things, you can hear it.
Yes.
So in terms of what your children experience, they recognise the value of the water. There's something happens when you hear water trickling that's very different from just seeing a stormwater pond.
So have you, as a result of people being able to hear the water, this is a bit of a flippant question, have there been any requests for a public toilet in the area?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Not yet. Okay. No. Well, I'm sure you would come up with a very artistic solution for that. And I think, you know, that is one of the canvases, if you like, that people have been thinking about is how do we take standard amenities like a toilet facilities and put an artistic element into them that reflects the community, but also acknowledging that, you know, it is a functional space. And I know that's one of the challenges we've talked about a lot in council, particularly toilet blocks that end up costing a lot and either looking quite plain or having art that is more planted art rather than integrated art.
We did one
at discussion with the community.
We did one at Tui Park in Beechhaven, which is a perforated metal shadow image that reflects the history of the area, and that's been very successful because it's quite subtle, but it's a decorative element that's over and above just flat walls.
That sounds lovely. Whereabouts is that park for people
Tui
who wanted
park.
To go and check it out? And
so
that's in
Beechhaven.
Beechhaven,
yeah.
Great. So what was, if you can think back, what has sort of been your driver about using art to work together with people to create better neighbourhoods and communities and ultimately a better Auckland?
My motivation.
Was there an aha moment for you where you went, hang on a second, this would work better, or is it something that's always been with you because of your background?
It's always been with me, but I think something that I recognise that in Kaipatake there is a really strong base of creative people living there because, as anybody who's an artist will know, it's not a way to a fast buck. And being the more affordable end of the North Shore, a lot of creative people live in that area, but there's no reflection of that in our public realm. And that's really what I saw as a gap.
Yeah, that's great. Mm. And growing up there, I would agree with that impression. Yeah, is the idea that that community hasn't had as much heritage stuff, hasn't had as much art, hasn't had as much stuff that's there because it's beautiful and it reflects and connects with the community. And that's very similar to the experience in Poketapapa, where we had one piece of public art 6 years ago.
Right.
For 56,000 people.
Yes.
So we've improved on that a little bit. But one of the things I wanted to explore with you a little bit is, do you get much kickback from the community? And I noted that you'd been you've had some experience leading a business association, and that's something where, you know, my impression is that it's quite focused on how do we keep business rates down, and the idea that spending on public art might be something that didn't necessarily get a lot of favour in the business community. So how did you sort of navigate that?
Well, public art was not something I did in Takapuna when I was managing the business association there, but I was very focused on the public space. And the Hurstmere Green, I pitched to council for a number of years. I didn't manage to actually achieve it during my term, but it is now the result that everybody enjoys. And so I was very pleased with that. But I'm not sure that the business associations or the bids are in the business of public art, which is why the Public Arts Trust needs to stand alone and separate from that business association, which then allows the businesses to support a Public Arts Trust with finance, but not necessarily out of the marketing for the area.
Right.
If you understand the difference. I did put on festivals and events, which is a very different thing because that brings people to a trade centre. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. And so that sort of understanding of art as creating a more vibrant space, a more vibrant town centre. Do you think that's something that people are starting to understand now, or is that something that people still, I guess it differs from place to place?
Yeah, it does. I think that it is gradually gaining momentum. As I say, I was delighted when the Stormwater people came to us, so that was really exciting to see. And I think more and more organisations like our CCOs, like Auckland Transport, are getting it in places and NZTA are getting it in terms of the way the motorways are constructed, and the concrete sidings are decorative now rather than just slab concrete, and that doesn't cost any more money, that's the point, but it gives you a sense of the place, it's a bit of visual interest, and so it's just all those elements help to create a more pleasant place to be in.
I suspect part of NZTA's motivation is probably that it slows people down. It may, because it's not so much like a racetrack where there's... So it'll be interesting to explore that with NZTA and see if their motivations are totally about placemaking.
Well, I think to be fair to them, the installations at the back of the university going down through to the port there.
Yes, through Grafton.
Yes, that's not just the sidings. There are public works there, public artworks. And they used to have a policy that 10% of a budget went to public art.
That's fantastic.
But I don't know where that's gone now. And we didn't get it on the shore with a busway.
So we must find out.
Yes.
Yes. So in terms of what you wish you could do with art in the local government space that you haven't managed to do yet, is there anything on your wish list?
More budget for it, more value for it. And I see some of the things that are being done by the Ludo Campbell-Reed's team, which create place and space through creative means. It concerns me that adds so much value, but is very difficult to quantify and measure, that it could be at risk when we're driving down costs. But I think the value that they deliver for the budgets that they spend is huge.
Do you feel, I sometimes feel that some of these sort of parts of projects are kind of done a little bit on the cheap and a little bit on the sly, and then we sort of wait and see if anyone complains, and then nobody complains, and then it becomes the new status quo. And I'm thinking particularly of down at Wynyard Quarter in Silo Park, where, for example, they turned some old construction barriers, which I suspect were beaten up and no longer able to be used for that purpose. They turned them into some seats that look like dragons.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw them, and my kids just were instantly attracted to them.
Yeah.
And we went down there, took some photos and said, right, who came up with this great idea?
Yeah.
I'd really like to know, because we've got a major construction project happening in Wesley, and it would be great if we could do something similar in our space. And it actually took me quite a while to work out who it was.
Mm.
And it seemed that they had sort of just kind of done it quietly rather than making a big deal out of it, because there is this fear that people will complain.
Well, it's like that park, which name I've forgotten, that little, what's it called, the one opposite the council's new building. Diagonally opposite, which they...
Oh, yes, Griffiths.
Griffiths Park, that's right. Because that was... the buildings on that were demolished in readiness for the CRL for a station, and it was going to be a vacant site for 2 years. So instead of leaving it as a fenced concrete site, they've turned it into a city backyard where it's just fun and people gather, and it's being really well used. And that wasn't an expensive exercise, but it was very much valued and well use, you know, good use of the space in the next 2 years.
And so for people who aren't familiar with precisely where that is, because it is pretty much brand new, it's just popped up in the last probably month.
Yeah.
That's if you go up Wellesley Street from the Civic, from Queen Street, it's just on the left
before
you get to Albert Street.
That's right,
on the corner there, And that's got planter boxes and benches, and I think there's also some artistic components as well.
And it's got a covered space. I think it's got beehives in there. It's really interesting.
Yeah, and so those ideas of bringing life, not just human life, but plant life, artistic life, creativity, insects with the bees into the city, I think is something that really improves the amenity. And coming from that design thinking and artistic background, are there any spots in your area that you think would be ripe for something like that, a little pop-up park?
Well, we've already done one, and it wasn't so much art-driven as community-led, and that was down in Beechhaven. And we did a whole placemaking exercise for that, where we had a site that was purchased for a civic space, and the community really got behind the design for that, and they came up with some very well-thought-through and well-consulted concepts. And then it went back to council, who then got a landscape architect in, and the whole result came back with straight lines. It looked like a bowling green.
Oh, no.
So we rejected it completely and started again. And the result now was what the community wanted, but it's just taken a little bit more effort to change the thinking within council as to how that could be delivered. And it's a much-loved park, and the local community group have taken over responsibility for part of the gardening and planting there. And so they're connected to it.
That's a great result.
Yeah.
And so, you know, reflecting on my first question, which was about whether local boards are doing better than community boards, would you say that that would have happened under a community board structure?
I actually initiated that as a community-led placemaking in my time on the community board against quite significant opposition. I don't know whether we would have got the final result through with budgets without the local board's financial independence.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. And the ability to champion the community, not just as an advocate, but a decision maker.
Yes, with money to back it up.
Yeah. So one of the things you mentioned there was around placemaking. And so a concept that's quite familiar to me after a few years of soaking in it at council. I used to be on the placemaking champions group that council started to get that thinking into the organisation, as I know you were. Do you want to just explain for listeners who might not be familiar with the concept of placemaking what that is? Because it does sound a bit jargony to the outside ear.
Well, it's really it's about connection and involvement in your own place. But I think one of the best things that describes it for me, David Enwich, who was a champion of this, who works professionally in Australia, and he was involved in one in the Bay of Islands that was very successful. He once said to me, a space is not a place until it's used for the purpose it wasn't designed for, which I love because it means you create the opportunity for people to gather and connect to a place. You don't design the hell out of it so that it can only be A or B. You let it be and then see how the community uses it. And I just, there's that sense to it as well, if that makes any sense to you.
Yes. And I guess I'm thinking about particularly we tend to build a playground, and then next to the playground we might build a skate bowl or park, and then there'll be some green space. But we often don't think about how those elements interact with each other, and down to the fact that sometimes even the pathways between those elements, there aren't even really paths. So if you wanted to, you know, if you had one kid skating and another kid on the playground, you might have to walk across mud to get between them, sort of thing. So is there a project coming up or a park that you think is ripe for that approach in your area? In Pukitapapa, we have a big stormwater project coming, and really interesting to hear that you had that positive experience with stormwater too, where they've agreed to put in a whole lot of there'll be artistic elements, but also playgrounds and spaces for people to walk and a BMX track and things like that will massively improve the amenity of the two parks, which, given that the people there are going to be disrupted for two and a half years during construction, is I think a fair trade. Is there anywhere you guys think you might have coming up? Or I know you've done a youth space in Marlborough recently.
Yes, of course. There's that one that's coming up, and that is being consulted on and designed to fit the youth and youth of different ages. I think that's the value of it, that you've got playgrounds that suit different ages, that has a strong community involvement, and with our youth board too, who are very strong. Our youth board's fantastic.
Yeah. And you found they've got on board with these ideas?
Oh, they've been leading a lot of them. They're really fantastic. And they've done some amazing things, like they're inviting the local board for dinner.
Wow.
At the end of the month, and they're cooking, which is really fantastic. So they work as a team and they want to host us, and it's just, they're delightful, and it's they add tremendous value to what we do.
And so do you find that sometimes a bit of a challenging space in terms of sometimes what seems like business as usual and common sense to local board members might seem like, why would we do it that way to young people, particularly in that sort of artistic space?
I think it's great to be challenged by young people. You know, I mean, it's one of the joys of this job is you get challenged all the time and you get a chance to learn and you get forced to not be stuck in your ways.
Yeah. And so thinking back to when you were on the community board, are there any particular things that you think back on that went through then that you've had to unpick or review, or you wish you would have that opportunity now that the local board structure is in place?
Unpick? No, because it was actually quite hard to achieve anything.
Right.
So there wasn't much to unpick, to be honest. So, But something I would like to talk about too, in terms of the visual amenity of the city, and that is our buses.
Yep.
Because I really think Auckland Transport missed a moment. And I was looking this morning, driving in here, the new livery for Auckland Transport is so corporate and so conservative.
It's dull.
It's very dull. And we could have had a real visual celebration of the growth in public transport, where we see buses everywhere because they're bright and cheerful and fun. And that livery is just boring. I mean, it's very smart, but it doesn't give us anything back. And it doesn't say fun. It doesn't say Auckland. And really, there's no visual reference to the amount of buses that we now have. And if they were all the same, like yellow cabs, red buses in the UK, you get a sense of the public transport support there is there, or the infrastructure. But we've just got this navy blue that just recedes. And it's just, I just think they missed a moment.
And thinking about the yellow cabs and the red buses, you know, they become iconic and symbolic of a city.
Exactly. Yeah. They could have all been public artworks, for goodness sake, the whole lot.
Yeah.
Or one sort of moving public artwork, whatever.
Yeah. So. And, I mean, they do have advertising on the back, but you do have, it's quite a large canvas.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It could have been, yeah.
And thinking about people who may have seen a bus from the top, you know, that would be a wonderful place to have a surprising artwork, wouldn't it?
Yes.
That you look down, you know, particularly if we think about people living in more intense environments now and more people living in the inner city and in higher buildings, to be able to look down and see, oh, look, there's a secret artwork on top of the
bus.
Yes,
that's right.
I know they all have to have numbers on them because so that they can be, you know,
identified
and tracked if there's an emergency. But imagine if those numbers were, you know, made out of native birds or
whatever.
There's
all sorts of opportunities that wouldn't disturb their branding but could have made it fun and exciting.
Yes.
And visually strong as a message of public transport. So
fun as well as functional.
And I think the other thing, because I do support what Auckland Transport has done, and I think they've made enormous inroads into improving public transport, and the city is coming of age very quickly in that realm. But I would also like to see, and this won't be popular with a lot of people, some forward projections for the park and ride land that they govern.
Yeah.
And I believe that there should be a long-term plan that park and rides are earmarked for housing once the feeder buses network is well established. It shouldn't be left as park and ride. It's a bad use of land.
Yeah.
And I'd like to see a long-term vision from Auckland Transport for park and ride facilities.
So you have a number of park and ride facilities in Kaipātiki.
We don't have any in Kaipātiki.
Oh, no, sorry, they're over the boundary, aren't they?
Yes, they're in Albany and, you know, the other side there. But there should be a long-term vision. We often get calls for increasing the park and ride capacity, and I think that's utterly the wrong way to go about it. We should be reducing them, maybe multi-level them, but that land is ideal for housing because it's close to public transport.
We don't have any park and rides in Puketapapa, but we're quite interested in a particular site that we know is going to become surplus that is currently owned by Auckland Transport, being used for a transport project. And the tension there is, if it is used as a park and ride, it won't be available for housing.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering whether there's an opportunity to perhaps do, you know, as you've suggested, park and ride in a temporary sense.
Yes.
But temporary doesn't have to be ugly.
No, it doesn't.
And so often we seem to do that. When something's going to be temporary, we just make it as ugly and bare and dull as we possibly can.
Yes.
And then it gets vandalised.
Yes.
Which is somebody's way of trying to make it look better, I guess.
Well, you see, Griffiths Park's a perfect example of that, because that would have become a horrible derelict site. And it hasn't cost much money at all to make that a fun space and well used. So, yeah, I totally agree.
So with your with the park and rides, which, you know, are over the boundary in Devonport, Takapuna and in Albany, but they are pretty functional spaces at the moment. I'm pretty familiar with the Smales Farm one, for example. And yet there's a whole lot of, you know, there's a school right there.
Mm-hmm.
There are Westlake Girls High School, one of the bigger secondary schools on the North Shore. There's there's an office park there, some of which has some public art in it. And I recall there's a fountain there and things like that. Mm-hmm. There's artistic things that happen there sometimes.
Yeah.
How could we bring that into the park and ride a bit so that it wasn't so boring?
Some of that land is privately owned, that Smales Farm, so that's a different thing, and those artistic elements are part of that developer's contribution.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I just hate seeing large bits of land with cars on all day.
Yes. Yeah.
It just seems such a waste. And while you say they function, I'm not sure that they do, and I hear reports in Albany that they're full by 7:30.
Yeah.
And so you've just got a car lot from 7:30 in the morning till 6:30 at night. Well, it's just a waste.
And it is very much like with our road corridors, so much space is given over to what is effectively storing your car.
Yeah.
And often efforts to beautify the side of the road with plantings, with, ways that also slow traffic down, that make the street a nicer place to be, with little gardens or whatever, often those are resisted because there is this fear of losing parking.
Yes.
Yeah, and it is sort of, I mean, I was thinking about with Smales Farm, maybe there's an opportunity there to think about the you know, the farming history of it, because I remember when it was a farm.
Yes, so do I.
Not actually that long ago.
No, it's not. I remember it.
But, you know, and I'm thinking about, you know, the bike lockers, for example, which are very ugly, painted the navy blue.
Yeah.
You know, an opportunity there to decorate those, maybe have some heritage panels on them. And I know that's outside your board area, but it just sort of seems to me those kind of opportunities, sometimes they pass us by, and often it's local boards who can, you know, give that input and say, hang on a second, here's an opportunity here, or we know a community group. I'm thinking about the Kaipātiki project, for example, with their work on bus shelters in your area. Did you want to explain a little bit about that?
It's the Kaipātiki Community Facilities Trust that does that. The Kaipātiki project is an environmental group, so there's a difference.
Sorry, yes.
No, we have a Community Facilities Trust, which is our community development arm, and they're a key partner and have been for a long time. They were established by Anne Hartley when she was mayor of Birkenhead City, actually. And again, they are a great asset because they sit as a partner alongside us. They can also attract external funds to enhance and develop the work that they do. But they went through an initiative of putting skins on our bus shelters with photographs of native birds, which I think some of them were donated by Councillor Cathy Casey.
Oh, images. That's beautiful. So what a wonderful note to finish on in terms of bringing their art into the functional public space. I know they get vandalised a lot less, don't they?
Well, the skins help to protect them too.
Yeah, great. Thanks very much, Lindsay. Hope to check back in with you in a year or two.
My pleasure. Thank you, Julie.
This has been Julie Ferry for Red Alert Radio. Ka kite anō.
Get together with your local MP next week at 9:05 a.m. Or listen online anytime on planetaudio.org.nz/redalertradio.